This podcast brought to you by Hope 103.2.
Kate Flanders, it is so great to talk to you. Thank you for taking the time.
Oh my gosh, thank you for having me.
Kate Flanders, you have a best-selling book, The Year of Less, which is such a fantastic read. It documents a very extreme experiment in your life. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, so The Year of Less is based off of a year where I decided to buy essentially nothing. I guess not really nothing. I was still allowed to buy, we'll call them like consumables. So things like groceries, I could put gas in my car. Obviously buy basic toiletries like deodorant and toothpaste and things you need. But I couldn't buy anything that was non-essential. So clothes, shoes, books, magazines, things for around the house. Yeah, just anything that was a non-essential, unless it was like something that I had run out of or like broken or something and I absolutely had to replace it, like could somehow not buy it, I couldn't buy it for a full year. The idea was, I was going to say, at the same time, what's also interesting is that I decided to declutter and I also got rid of a lot of my stuff that same year. Sometimes it sounds like the two don't go together, like you're going to get rid of everything and then also you're not allowed to buy more of it. But it came from a place of being very aware of the fact that I had spent tons and tons of money over the years on stuff that I either never used or never even really wanted. I was like buying it for all the wrong reasons. And so the two things combined just seemed like I'm going to try this thing where I basically am just not consuming for a year.
And that is a very hard thing to do. One, as a 20-something year old, I'm 24 myself. So that's really hard, and especially in such a consumer-driven world, really hard to do that. It's a radical experiment. Can you talk to me about the actual decision-making of that? Where that decision where you said, okay, I'm doing this, I'm committing to it. What was that like, the emotions and the thinking behind that?
Yeah, so it started when I was 25, I was maxed out with almost $30,000 of debt, and I spent the next 2 years paying that off. So sometimes there's a misconception that I did the challenge to pay off my debt, but I was actually already debt-free. The problem is that first of all, I think like my debt repayment approach was very aggressive, and it came from a real place of shame. Like I was very ashamed of the fact that I'd had all that debt. And so I feel like I was just really hard on myself for 2 years while paying it off. And the problem then with that is like, I didn't really learn anything about why I had gotten into debt. I was just sort of almost like punishing myself for 2 years. Like I couldn't buy things or spend any money at that point because I was punishing myself. That was very different, but I didn't really learn anything then. So at the end of those 2 years, I basically went back to spending all of my money. Now I would say these things, and I say these things because I used to post all my numbers to my blog years ago. And so I would post like a monthly budget that would say, I want to save 20% of my income this month. And that should have been very doable based on how much I'd been putting towards debt years before. But I could never make it happen. So I'd get to the end of every month and I might have saved 10 or 12 was the most I had ever saved. But there were also months where I saved nothing. And that's because I was just spending everything all over again. So I wasn't going back into debt, but I was not saving.
So you documented your journey in your book, The Year of Less. Obviously, a few years have passed since then. What important lessons have you kept from that journey that you're still kind of holding on to in your life?
I mean, a lot. I do buy things now, but it's still not much. I would say if there was one big overarching thing, it was probably to stop browsing. Like the major habit that I changed was that I don't browse, which means like I don't, well, I mean, most of us don't walk through stores at this point, but I don't walk through stores. I wouldn't walk through a mall really. I don't visit like a lot of retailer websites, especially because I know that if you're browsing, you can almost always find something, right? Like if you're looking, there is something you could spend money on. So I don't really visit websites. Of course, you know, we've had to make online purchases this year because that's how it works. It's very much my practice is I just go on for the thing that I need and then I get off. Like, I just do not spend time browsing and looking around for, like, what else is out there. I think on maybe a more emotional level, probably the biggest thing I learned was that I was a very... I was a much more emotional shopper than I realized, or just emotional consumer. That I talk about that a lot in the book, is that, you know, when I was younger, I started drinking actually quite young, and I stopped when I was 27. And I think because drinking was no longer an option, shopping then became the next thing, right? So it's like, because I couldn't drink away maybe sadness or rejection or anxiety, I would spend money instead and temporarily feel better. And the biggest thing that year taught me was I had to feel my feelings and just get on with it afterwards. Like, I just, it was a, like, hitting a great big pause, not only on shopping or, of course, drinking, obviously, but really sitting with myself for the first time, like, sitting with my feelings.
It's amazing how much emotions and consuming is wrapped up in each other. And one thing I really love in the book, a really blunt quote from you, is that being in debt does not make you a bad person. And I think just like hearing those words, I feel like there can be so much guilt surrounding financial hardship, families, young people in debt. What would you say to people who are financially struggling right now?
First of all, I think a big thing is you're so not alone. I think we feel so alone in whatever our financial struggle is. You're just not. You're so not alone. I feel like the majority of people do not have savings. They are living paycheck to paycheck. And that's something obviously we wish was not true. And in that statement, it just shows you are not alone. But that's a big one. It can feel incredibly isolating. It will feel like no one understands you, or just you can't talk to anyone about it. I think that's a hard one. Like, money is still so taboo, even though we don't want it to be. But part of that, I think, sadly, and I would just say this then, is that it's hard. Like, it will take time, much more time than me just saying it once is going to do. But, like, your net worth, so the amount of money you have or your current financial situation, is not a reflection of who you are. It is not a reflection of your self-worth. If you have debt, like, does not make you a bad person. Like, sometimes could there be better choices that we're making? Of course. And sometimes debt comes in from other reasons, right? Like, sometimes debt comes in literally because that is the avenue we have to choose to help us to get through certain situations. Either way, even if you've, you know, made just sort of less mindful spending decisions, it doesn't mean you're bad. It might just mean that your priorities aren't in line. Like, you haven't quite figured out what your priorities are yet. And all of that, I think so much back to when I was in debt. I wish someone had just said to me, like, instead of sort of pointing me to specific numbers and saying, like, save X percent or do this or do that, because also if you can't meet that stuff, it does not feel good. But instead, if someone had said, like, what are your priorities? Not anyone else's. Like, what are your priorities? And to start thinking about finances from that place.
I think finances can often feel like stagnated from emotions as well. Like, they shouldn't mix. But I just, yeah, I really love the way you said that. Obviously, there's a lot of things this year that haven't been up to people, you know, haven't been made as a result of our choices. COVID throwing everything for a loop. Have you found that you've been able to keep some of these habits going through COVID and that's helped you?
Yeah. I think that I did do a couple, I probably bought too many books than I will read even in the next year.
Me too. It's okay.
Right. And so, like, I probably did buy a few more books, but that's it. So I can say, like, I can look around my home. One, I will also say, I was supposed to be in Europe. Like, I was supposed to be traveling this year, and instead I'm grounded at my dad's house. grounded literally just by airplanes. So.
Not quite the same as Paris.
Not quite. So I think in a way that helps, though. I'm not, yeah, I don't have my own home sort of to fill. I'm like, I have my bedroom and I don't want to fill it with a bunch of stuff because it's not very big to begin with. But yeah, no, I have. I think though, this year, if we just went on the emotional track of it, like this year, even though I've done a lot of work of sort of sitting still and feeling my feelings, this year has required almost more attention to my emotions because it's been such a roller coaster, right? Like you can being mindful and content, and also the reality is that when your plans change all the time, there's a real up and down to that. Like there's a real roller coaster of emotions that comes with that. So I've still had to sit with myself with a lot of stuff, and but yeah. So yes, and there's probably many books.
Yeah. What's been a struggle for you during COVID?
So actually not being able to travel wasn't actually a struggle. I think like occasionally it would have been nice to sort of get away, but that was actually okay. I can see like silver linings and things like being in my hometown, I've gotten to see it in a way that I hadn't probably since I was a teenager. And so there've been some interesting pieces around that, but I mean, living with a parent, my sister's also here, lockdown where it's just the three of us. There's just the natural tensions of being with the same people way too much and not really being able to escape each other. And so there's been a lot of hard conversations, and at the same time, I think we're going to exit this with relationships that you don't often get with your parents as an adult. Like specifically my family, the fact that we're all living together as adults, that's not something that usually happens. And so while it's been challenging, I just think we're going to have an interesting respect for each other and an interesting, like, closer relationship as we get older because of this.
I love that. Your brand new book, Adventures in Opting Out, it's a bit of a field guide to opting out from your expectations, forging your own path in life. What do you think stops people from actually doing that in today's world?
The first and quickest thing that wants to come out is like the fear of what other people are going to think. I think that's not true for everyone. There are obviously people who just magically seem to be much more comfortable being who they are and expressing themselves and not worrying quite so much what people think. And I'm not one of those people. And the people that know and the people that I've talked to for the book and have just met over the years, the number one concern is typically either what are people going to think, or we're worried that we will lose people along the way. So that if you decide to change your life, people are concerned that other people may not come along with them for that, right? They might lose friends. They might have family that doesn't understand their choices. But yeah, so much of it seems to be worrying about other people.
I can see throughout the journey of your two books, almost this journey from becoming less consumer minded to evolving to really living an intentional life that's true to you. What do you think that living intentionally means? How do you live out that?
So I think it's actually just being more mindful and so less impulsive. Less, especially, I mean, you're right, with the year of less, you know, I learned how to control a lot of impulse purchases. I also would have talked then about the impulse to drink. And making very clear choices, I think, honestly, in some ways, every single day that you want to live a certain way and being incredibly aware of that when things come up, like being so aware and assured of your values and your choices, that when in any situation that comes up, just being comfortable enough to say, nope, like I'm going to do it this way.
I think it can be so hard to do that, especially I know for me, I lead such a busy life and you can almost fill up your calendar with events or certain things that you don't really care about or want to do, but you're doing it to fill a societal expectation or whatever it might be. Why do you think we feel the need to fill our lives with everything rather than, having a bit of calm and peace?
I mean, I think the answer to that would probably be a little bit different for everyone. I do think probably one general answer that, or a common one, not general, a common answer that would be, like, that would be able to be applied to a lot of people is, sadly, that the way our society has been built up, like, actually fuels our self-worth. Like, you know, how much we can do, how much we can keep up with. So I think that's one answer. I also think another one is, again, going back to the worthiness piece, like, if we say no, then people will either think we're not good enough or we're not capable, or, like, especially with commitments, right? Like, people ask you to do something because they do think you're capable of it or would want to do it or whatever. And if you say no, there's a fear that it could change their opinion of you. Yeah, it's hard though, right? Like, so much of this, it's internal and yet it's external that we're looking at, or like that we're concerned about, but the internal, it's all internal stuff.
I feel that so deeply, because I feel like, yeah, that self-worth, it's like intrinsically wrapped up in my social calendar, which is so weird. Like, and I get serious FOMO, like fear of missing out on things, all the time. But you say that there's joy to be found in opting out, right? What is this joy?
Yeah, I think that, well, the joy will come if you're opting out of the right thing. So I think if you tried to opt out of something, I don't know, maybe like you see that everyone else is kind of making this other decision, or I think of it like, imagine like New Year's resolutions where everyone says, I'm giving up this thing for 30 days or for the year. And you're like, okay, yeah, everyone else is doing it, I should do that. I actually think that will be a very painful experience, or is often the one that we give up on because it wasn't actually our goal. It was somebody else's goal. So it wasn't really an intentional decision. It was just kind of, this seems to be the thing people are into right now, so I'll go along with it. So that probably wouldn't be joyful. So I do think, though, if you are picking the right thing for you, you will notice something right away. Now, this can be as simple as, say, like, you know, obviously, especially right now, after that documentary came out on Netflix, a lot of people are questioning their relationships with social media. So imagine if you really were noticing some negative impacts, and whatever they might be for you. But if you were really noticing them, if you gave up the platform that felt like it was giving you the most negative impacts, if that's the right choice for you, you will probably notice benefits right away. Right? So you'll probably notice, let's say, you're more present, you somehow are happier, you're able to focus a little bit more in a day, you're any number of things. You just have less anxiety, because maybe checking it is giving you anxiety, and it seems so minimal, but once you actually give it up, maybe it is actually helping. It could be something like knowing, actually, this is one I had to do this year. I've known for a long time that dairy and I were not friends. And yet I've continued to eat it here and there. And in June, I actually stopped. And I had a little bit accidentally in something maybe 2 weeks ago. All these different things were coming up. But in these past 6 months, I've noticed, wow, my skin's so clear. It's so, like, I barely need to moisturize anymore. This is so interesting. Like, I'm never bloated. I'm, like, I just feel good. I feel clearer. I have less fogginess. Wow, is that possible? Like, but it's because it was the right choice for me. It's not because I'm, like, on some anti-dairy diet that everyone's doing or something, right? Like, that's a choice I've had to make, and it's working for me. Like, there's a positive thing right away. I think, like, those are all small things, and those are, like, kind of the early signs that you've made the right choice for you. But on some of the bigger ones, or even just a longer-term thought, is that if you are making more intentional choices, over the long term, I just think you learn how to trust yourself more. I think that it can be incredibly scary to decide to do something different than maybe your friends or family are doing. And also because the voice in your head, which is voices that you've heard from family and friends and marketing and all kinds of stuff, like those voices that are in your head are telling you why you shouldn't do it. And it can take time to like really trust yourself that you know what is right for you. And that's, I don't know, it takes time, but I think that now that is the thing. I didn't explicitly write this in the book. It was sort of something that came to me more afterwards. I'm like, of course that's what happens at the end. Like, it takes time, but how amazing to feel like you can trust yourself later.
That's incredible. I love all these, yeah, joyful things that come from, yeah, I guess changing habits and changing just the way you think about life and yourself. But one of the great things I love about your writing is that you don't shy away from those hard experiences. And you did talk a bit about the pain and sacrifice of opting, forging a different path, that it's not all sunshine and rainbows changing who you are. Can you speak into that pain and sacrifice a little bit?
Yeah, well, I mean, first I'll say that is the reason why I wrote the book, which sometimes when I say that out loud, it feels really depressing.
Like, no, not at all.
I wrote the book to talk about the hard parts. But that was something I really noticed, both in myself, kind of at speaking events and stuff for the Year of Less, but also at, like, thinking back on all the self-help books I've read over the years, I've never really seen someone go into, like, what actually happens when you decide to adopt all these things, right? So there can be, you know, all these incredible examples and steps to follow that can help us change our habits. They can help us live more simply or minimally or whatever, more productive, like, whatever it is. But no one really would talk about the fact that when you change your life, like, other things are going to change. And that meaning that, yes, like, going back to the question that people, or of, like, why people are afraid to do something different, like, what other people are think, yeah, you are going to come up against that. Like, you are going to come up against what people think. You are going to come up or find that some people don't come along with you, right? Like, I've definitely lost friends from the majority of the changes I've made. And that doesn't mean I've lost all my friends. I would say the majority of them are here and still with me. But yeah, you stop drinking. Yep, you lose some friends. Even something simple as, yeah, like you do stop using certain social media platforms. Some people don't reach out to you anymore because that was the way that they were connecting with you and they're not going to make the effort. I've certainly noticed as more stuff's going on and I'm sort of changing the way I'm living even more, or I was before I couldn't travel. You know, I think that it's almost like you can't relate as much with the people who were with you 5 or 10 years ago because you have gone in such different directions. That's still hard. But it's, yeah, I'd say the things you'll come up against are everything from people trying to project their own concerns onto you, right? So people will try and talk you out of it. It's hard to remember this, but it's most of the time not personal. Like, most of the time people are just saying what they would be saying to themselves of why they wouldn't make that change. But yeah, if you, I don't know, screw up a little or decide to change your mind and go back to what you were doing before, those same people are going to come at you with a ton of shame. Right? Like, you will not be met with love and appreciation. Or again, some people will. But from the people who originally were kind of projecting stuff at you, yeah, they'll shame you back. Like, they will shame you and, like, just stay with us. Don't try and do that again. Just, like, stay here with us.
What encouragement would you give to people who are kind of struggling in that tension right now, that painful side of this?
The harder answers, which are things like, it's okay to create space between people like yourself and people who don't fully support you. It is okay. It does not mean it's easy, but it's okay. Like, you're allowed. You're allowed to create space between unsupportive people. Really try to remind yourself of the people who are being supportive, right? Like, and what I have found is that my friendships have really changed, or even within my family, the people I'm closest to, that has changed. And that's not the plan, or it's not what you thought was going to happen, maybe, but, like, really kind of looking at the people that you spend time with, or the people that you talk to who really, like, you feel seen and heard. Like, keep leaning on those people. Keep, like, have more of that, more time with those people in your life. Because if you, that's the hard part, is that it's not just people are going to leave you. If you are really, like, practicing self-love and trust, you will have to let go of people. You will have to give some people less time and energy and just trust. Like, it doesn't have to be dramatic. No one has to get in a fight about it, but you can just create space between the people that it's not working with. And again, remembering, like, What is the goal? Are you noticing benefits? Has this been right for you? And like, who is being unsupportive and what are they saying? Are those things even true for you? Does that feel true for you, like what they're saying? And if not, just keep reminding yourself, like, what you're doing, what, why you're doing it, what the goal is.
Kate, you have shared so much wisdom lessons today. This journey that you've been on, it's been, what, the better part of a decade now.
Mm.
What would you say, if you could sum it up, overall lesson that you've learned?
That nobody knows you better than yourself. And that is probably so cliche. And it's just true. Like, nobody knows you better than you know yourself. No one can take away what you know to be true for you, unless you let them, right? But you know, like, I believe that more than anything. Like, you know deep down what is right for you, and no one else will know it more than you.
What a perfect way to end. Kate Flanders, it has been such a pleasure chatting to you. Your brand new book, Adventures in Opting Out, as well as the bestseller, The Year of Less, out on Australian shelves right now. Thank you so much for taking the time and sharing all of your wisdom and infinite knowledge about this. I so appreciate it.
Oh, thank you so much. This was really, really great. Great questions.
Thanks for listening. Start your day with Life Words. Subscribe to Hope 1032's free daily email devotional at hope1032.com.au.